Hello, and welcome to the Bosun's Call Woodworking Podcast, Episode 0. I am your host, James, the Bosun, and today we have for you guest and friend of the show, Justin, a tasty, hazy IPA with a bear wearing sunglasses on the can, a sticky, cool, consumable tool that will change the way you work in your shop, guaranteed, and the origin of a sailor term that you've probably used before. And then the main topic will be a kind of below-the-deck, behind-the-scenes episode on why we named it the Bosun's Call Woodworking Podcast and where we came from and a little bit of background on me. So without further ado, let's get cracking. Justin, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, James.
So we are talking about a whole bunch of stuff. Before we get started, we are going to do our little beer review here. So we have Goose Island Beer Company Hazy Beer Hug, which is an IPA. I'm not sure if it's a New England style. Let's see. It says Hazy India Pale Ale. So I would guess that it's that. It's a 6.8. Let's get started. All right. So I really enjoy this one. This is one of the ones I get on the regular. And pours great. Smells good. Very citrusy.
I'm a big fan of these as well. The entire mix pack.
Mm-hmm.
Bear Hug.
That's one of the things I hate getting is when you have like a variety pack and like three out of the four are awesome, but that one you just don't really like that much.
Yeah.
And you end up with a ton of them in your fridge.
Yep. Because you drink the ones you enjoy first and then you got all the other ones left over and you're like, oh, crap.
You're like, I'm not always in the mood for a chocolate porter, but I have 14 of them.
Yep.
So
thanks, Costco.
Hey, don't knock Costco, man. I've got some good deals there.
I know. I would spend all my money there if I could.
So it's got a nice head, very hazy, kind of a golden color, not completely transparent.
I like those citrus notes.
Mm. Oh, that's very good.
Almost that California oranges hint in the background there, a little aftertaste.
Juicy and hazy IPAs are my favorite, and I used to hate IPAs because I had a lot of the very harsh, hoppy, smack you in the face with the hops, kind of just like, hand me some hops and let me chew on them for what this tastes like, you know, type of thing. I like these because, yeah, it's a very smooth finish. Mm-hmm. It doesn't hit you in the face super hard. Very tasty, very tasty, very smooth. Very drinkable. So those are among some of my favorites. So now that we have our beer cracked, let's get into our first topic, which is something that I've been wanting to talk about for a while, which is carpenter's tape or double-sided sticky tape. It's fancy woodworking double-sided sticky tape. So there are two varieties that I use most of the time. One of them is kind of a thinner, I'd say it kind of tears and everything like painter's tape. And the other one is kind of a thicker. It's kind of got a little bit of give to it. And it's almost like double-sided duct tape. But it's not duct tape. And both of them are designed, the adhesion's very strong, but they peel up nice and clean. And they don't do a lot of like tearing out grain and stuff like that when you're using them on wood surfaces that you're working on, which is ideal, which is why they're called carpenter's tape. And the use cases for the stuff are like all over the place. I use it everywhere. I even use it for stuff that's outside of the shop. There's nothing to do with it. The thicker kind of, it's got a little bit of a give to it. Mm-hmm. Stuff is really good. It has really, really strong adhesion. The thinner stuff is really nice because you usually can use, it doesn't stick right away. You got to really press on it.
Okay.
So you can kind of move and get your whatever you're trying to stick down dialed before you press onto it and it sticks. And then both of them peel up really nice. So you can just kind of roll it. It's almost like a rubber cement or like a super hardcore sticky note, like a post-it note. So when you can peel it, you can peel it back up when you're done. And because I know this is going to sound like blasphemy for anyone listening. I hate duct tape. I hate it with a passion.
It does sound like blasphemy.
I mean,
everybody loves duct tape.
Everybody loves duct tape. I do love duct tape, but I hate cleaning it up when it's been like sun-baked.
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about.
And it leaves that adhesive residue.
Yeah.
Almost like you only peeled the tape part off and left the adhesive on the project or the surface.
Oh, gosh. It's awful. And then the other one that I really don't like, and it's been a trend that everyone's been doing is the painter's tape and super glue trick. So have you heard about this?
I have not. Go into that for our listeners.
Yeah. So it's been like, I don't know, a video trend on YouTube or something. I've seen everybody use it where they'll take painter's tape, put it on the one wood surface that you want to stick something to, and then put painter's tape on the other one, on the other board or whatever you're using, and then use super glue on the tape itself, and then the super glue accelerator, and then stick them together. So you're basically making really expensive double-sided sticky tape, like carpenter's tape.
That sounds like a lot of work.
And it's a lot of work.
You could just buy this one product.
Yeah, it's like, that's a lot of extra steps for no reason.
Yeah.
So I don't like that when it's, this stuff is so cheap and it's so good. And it's, I keep finding new use cases for it. I've used it for making like fence standoffs when you're doing small parts because you don't want, you know, the little bits to kick back on the table saw because they don't, you know, they're really close to the fence or something like that. I've used it to make jigs of every kind without actually having to screw bits of scrap wood together. And then now that scrap wood's full of holes. I've used it for router templates. It's fantastic for router templates to, you know, whatever you're putting down to move around, then you can just peel it off and now you can reuse that template.
Yeah.
I've used it outside. I'll use it on tables to make sure that tablecloth stays stuck down so kids don't pull everything off the table onto them.
Right.
It's like, no, it's going to stay there. And I keep finding more and more use cases for it. It acts like an extra pair of hands because if you're, I don't know, mounting a drawer slider or like marking out stuff to drill holes or something like that, you can just stick it in there and it stays. No clamps or anything needed. You can mark out, drill out whatever you need to. Then you can pull it off and then screw it in. I keep finding more and more reasons to use it everywhere. I would say like it is going to change your life in the shop. I can't believe I didn't know about this stuff for so long. And of course, I'm sure there's some people listening be like, "Man, I can't believe you didn't know about the carpenter's tape."
Yeah.
Yes, I didn't. Sorry. But I've been using it for several years now, and I keep finding more reasons to use it. And just the fact that it doesn't peel up as well, but if you like roll it, it comes up clean. It doesn't like tear out a bunch of grain. It can if you're being super aggressive with it. And then there's the two different kinds, so you can find your favorite, but just get it on Amazon and try a couple of times. There's two types that I really like, and I'll see if I can add some links if you don't want to go hunting through the all the different brands. But there's two types that I really like that I use all the time, and they're fantastic. I should give you a roll, even though you're just kind of a beginner into this stuff, to just give it a try because I'll bet you'll find 1,000 uses for
it. I probably could.
Yeah, like just stick the kids to the wall or something like that. Make sure the remote is in one place and stays there.
I wish. I'm tired of hearing in the morning that people can't find the remote, and then I have to scour the couch cushions.
Well, you can just get it on your phone now. You
know? I have it on my phone because the remote consistently gets lost. So I have the Roku app on my phone.
And your phone's going to get absorbed by the couch cushions.
Right. It better not. I need that.
Just put one of those locator things on it. You know what I'm talking about? The little pucks. I'm not an app big
the,
Apple user.
The little tag.
You know what
the
I'm talking about? Yeah, the AirTag. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to talk about.
Yeah, shameless Apple plug.
Give us money.
Please. Please fund the show with advertisements.
All right. So that is something that I think will definitely change the way you do things in the shop and make it a lot easier. And safer. I've made a lot of great jigs and even things like on the drill press to keep things from, you know, grabbing onto the bit and becoming a helicopter and all kinds of stuff. It's great. It's repeatable. You don't have to use up a lot of wood to make. I guess sometimes I feel like I'm just making jigs.
Right.
I don't actually make projects in the shop. Like certainly that's the case. And that's one thing I really like about it is it kind of speeds up that process because all I got to do is like mark a couple lines, drop some of the tape on some scrap wood pieces, put it down, and I've got a fence, and I can make something if I'm reproducing several pieces without having to make like a permanent jig or semi-permanent jig. And then my favorite thing is once you pull it all apart, all the boards or scrap pieces that you used are perfectly clean, like they were when you pulled them out of the scrap bin, so you can use them for something else instead of being full of holes and stuff like that.
Yep.
And please stop using up all your super glue on painter's tape. It's such a bad option.
That just seems like too many steps. Why do that?
Well, the biggest thing, and I think the accelerator is just a base, because basically a center acrylate or super glue is a adhesive suspended in an acid, I think. So that's why when you put baking soda into it, there's like the baking soda trick,
yeah,
where it'll instantly cure and you can use it for like gap filling and stuff.
Okay.
I use that on like my models and things that I build.
Yeah.
That's all it really is. It's like a base. Like some people say you can use water, but water is pretty neutral, so I wouldn't do that. But because it cures through moisture, but that's basically what it is that acids evaporating and curing, something like that. I'm not sure on the science. Somebody can check us in the comments and explain the science of super glue to us. But when they're putting on the accelerator, like it gets everywhere. Like the overspray is all over the wood and stuff. And I'm like, I don't know if that's going to affect a finish later on,
right,
but it's definitely there.
Yep.
So I don't know. And then you know how super glue is. That stuff crawls.
Yep.
Like it gets everywhere.
Everywhere.
So I mean, I can imagine you putting down a thin bead and then putting those two together and it gets out onto the wood. And it's just, I don't know. It looks cool in the videos. Like it might work. But and I guess you could use it if you're in a pinch and you don't have anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just so many steps. And like that stuff ain't cheap.
Yeah.
Like super glue. I mean, it's relatively cheap, but using that much of it.
But just get some carpenter's tape.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
That's the point we're making, people. Just get carpenter's
just get
tape.
you'll
thank
love
us later.
Yeah, you'll definitely thank us later. All right. So I have a sailor / pirate term for you. Let's see, which one am I gonna use? My favorite one is kind of a long one.
Mm-hmm.
Should I tell you that one?
Yes.
Okay. It's kind of like the best one too, but okay, we'll start with that. It's all downhill from here.
Right.
So I love all things nautical, and I love figuring out the origins or the derivations, if you'd like to drop a $5 word down, of a term or something that we use. And I think we've used them for so long, and this one's from the age of sail, right, of tall ships and things, and sailing and piracy and all that good stuff. I mean, I guess we're still in the age of piracy. Technically.
Completely, yeah.
The golden era of piracy, right?
Right.
The one that we romanticize. And it's just been around for so long, but sailed, like tall ships have gone by the wayside that we've kind of forgotten where it comes from. So my term for you is between the devil and the deep blue sea.
I like it.
You've heard it?
I've heard it.
Have you used it?
I've used it. I can say that I haven't heard it or used it in quite some time. However, I am familiar with the term.
So it's probably a rarer term.
Mm-hmm.
I've got lots of these, so we'll have more of them that you've definitely used, maybe even used on a regular basis.
Good.
Because everyone like goes through like phases where they have a catchphrase.
Yep.
And those change. But this one I really like because it's kind of a twofer.
Mm-hmm.
So between the devil and the deep blue sea. It's kind of like having a hard job to do or being between a rock and a hard place is kind of how it's used today. So the devil was the nickname for the most outboard deck board on a ship. It was so far outside, it was actually on the other side of the railings. And they nicknamed it the devil because there is a process called paying, which is not giving money to, but it's a process of sealing the boards on a ship by soaking bits of frayed rope in tar and then stuffing them in the cracks in the boards. That process is called paying because you don't want water in your ship going through the boards on your deck and filling your boat with water.
Right.
Because then your boat becomes a reef.
Yep.
An underwater feature. So this process was called paying, and it was just a regular maintenance thing that they did for all the boards on the ship to seal and waterproof it. So if you had the devil to pay, you had to do that last board on the outside, which meant you had to throw yourself overboard in like a little swing chair thing. And while the ship's doing whatever the ship's doing, like rocking back and forth and stuff, you're sitting there trying to hammer and deal with pitch and sting, you know, and sticky pitch and all this kind of stuff. And it was kind of a not a great job to get assigned. And if you were there paying the devil, you were between the devil and the deep blue sea, which would have been behind you.
Right.
Right. So I love that time, that term being between the devil and the deep blue sea, because it's like two in one.
Yep.
So having the devil to pay doesn't mean paying a price. It means getting your hands dirty with tar.
Yep.
And sealing up them boards.
For the good of the ship.
For the good of the ship. You got to keep that thing waterproof.
Yep.
Otherwise, it becomes a submarine.
Absolutely.
For the first and last time.
Yep. One-use submarine.
So I love that stuff, and there's a ton of them that come from like the Prohibition.
Yeah.
So like 86. Like if you've ever worked in the industry, like the 86 something is like, you know, you say, I don't want tomatoes on my burger. So you say 86 tomatoes.
Get rid of that.
And everyone uses it, but they have no idea where it comes from.
Yep.
It was actually the address of a famous speakeasy in New York in the age of the Prohibition. And it was their code word to hide all the liquor and get all the VIPs out the back door.
Oh, okay.
Because the feds were coming.
Yep.
So they would be like 86, and they had like trap doors to like hide the liquor, and they served it all in teacups. So you'd pour it into the drains. There were like drains on the bar. And be like, oh no, we're just like
drinking tea.
Very obviously a bar,
right?
And like, oh no, we're just drinking tea. And like, no, you're not. And, you know, why are there drains in there? Like,
the tea just smells like whiskey.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, Senator, we need to get you out this door right now. The feds are coming.
Absolutely.
Please pour your tea down the drain first.
Well, it's just incredible the words that have carried over to modern day, and to go back and, for me, it is very interesting to go back and find out where they originated and to learn the history of the word and how it's been used over time, and to watch over that span that we still work this into our conversations today, that these words have endured time.
And I like the old terms, right? Some of the new stuff that's coming out, like no cap, I don't like very much.
It's just ignorant babble.
Yeah, it's just made up stuff. Versus like some of the terms that have stood the test of time are like funny names of things. Because you know everything on a ship is named something funny.
Yep.
Like it's not the floor, it's the deck. It's not the wall, it's the bulkhead.
Yep.
You know.
I always liked the scuttlebutt.
The scuttlebutt.
I'm going to go take a drink out of the scuttlebutt.
Well, scuttlebutt is
sounds terrible.
Scuttlebutt is a term for a water fountain, and it is also a slang term for gossip.
Yeah.
So if you say, what's the scuttlebutt? Oh, see, now they're getting three. They're getting three for one.
You got a bonus. They worked the bonus out of us in the first episode.
You did it. You made it. Congratulations. So we'll just reuse it later in like episode 500. They'll never know.
Yep, we'll go into deeper detail about it then. We're gonna segue away from that before we give away all our terms.
Yes. So we're getting into the main meat of our episode zero, the below decks or behind the scenes kind of thing.
Yep,
because this is kind of like our episode zero, like our intro as far as like, hey, welcome to the podcast. This is what it's about. You know, and then also kind of behind the scenes as far as like the origins of the name and all that good stuff, and a little bit a background on me. So, you know, welcome. If you've made it, you've probably binged all of our episodes and you're like, one more. So you found us here on the intro episode.
Yep.
So I hear you got some questions for me, Justin.
I do. I do have some questions for you, James.
Shoot.
We'll jump right into it. Starting with why Boatswain's Call? What prompted the use of that name?
So the bosun is, as you may know, is a billet on a ship. A billet is a job title, basically. And the bosun on an old ship would have been responsible for discipline on the ship. He's kind of like the foreman of the ship.
Okay.
And he would have been responsible for everything from the deck, which is the, you know, below decks is where you sleep, and then the cannons are on all the cargo, and then from the deck, the top of the ship, up into the rigging and all the sails and that stuff. Would have been responsible for all of that. So, all and, you know, the deck itself, the railings, like all the wood stuff there, you know, all the rigging, the lines. You would have a sailmaster that would be responsible for repairing that kind of thing. Also responsible for all the discipline on board the ship. So he kind of filled that role. Also was very, very knowledgeable. You'd also have a ship's carpenter, but repairs were very much his responsibility in a lot of ways, especially for all the ropes. So knowing all the knots and stuff like that, being like an uber like Eagle Scout and knowing like all these different ways to, you know, tie and repair lines and stuff like that, because you're an island essentially floating out there. No one's coming to save you. So you got to figure out how to fix, you know, whatever needs fixing while you're out there underway type of thing. I thought that was super interesting. And then a background on me, I got involved with a nonprofit living history reenactment group that reenacted a privateer ship. Not a pirate ship? No, not a pirate ship. We're government-sanctioned pirates, because if you had a letter of marque, which was basically like, you can go and take their ships of our enemy country as long as we get a cut. Yep. So that's kind of like how that worked.
How and then the government of them.
Yeah, well, and then you can just have your laundry list of letters of marque and be like, okay, where's the one that I need for this inspection? Oh, here. It's got to be here somewhere. Where's the one for Spain? God, quick, quick. You know. So, you know, and you know, a lot of merchant vessels had to be armed because they were ripe for being taken and that kind of stuff. And I'm getting ahead of myself. Anyway, so for this reenactment group, we really got into the history of things because we wanted to be more than just, you know, an entertainment. We really wanted to know the stuff and be able to demonstrate it.
Right.
And we would actually go to schools and show what the stuff actually looked like. We actually made like the different implements that were used, I mean, for navigation, for repair. You could see that stuff. We were actually doing it. Mm. So, like, I actually learned all the knots that you need to basically build a ship. And we built a ship. We built, like, a transforming 40-foot mast, you know, ship. You know, it would be parked on a lawn, but, you know, you could get on it and you could see all the stuff. I mean, everything. A helm, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
Another good term I can tell you about later, the nine yards. So we all picked a billet, and mine was the bosun, and I absolutely fell in love with it. It was awesome. Cause you had all these things to learn and demonstrate. And I love learning new things and getting into different hobbies and stuff like that. So I got into the knots and I was actually teaching I was actually doing the job cause we were like building this thing and we were building rat lines and I was showing people how to tie the knots to make the rat lines that we actually climbed later on. So it was a really cool experience. I had a lot of fun with it. That was like way back when I was in college and I actually had the time to do it. And then, you know, life happens and the whole thing kind of came to an end. But I've always loved it. And I've always, like, you know, everyone, you know, when you're in character, like, hey, bosun, you know, so it's something I kind of internalized.
Yeah.
And the bosun's call part of the title, the call is actually the bosun's whistle. That's another name for it, is the bosun's call. Mm-hmm. And that was used to relay orders on the ship because there's a lot going on. It's really noisy, especially if there's a storm or a fight or something going on, or there's cannon fire and your ears are ringing and all that good stuff.
Yep.
So that whistle, and I mean, you've heard a, you know, a bosun's whistle before. I'm sure everyone's heard it, that call for the like piping aboard and stuff like that. And maybe I'll edit in that whistle call here. Thank you, editor me. And so that sound though is so cool to me because it's like the call to adventure, right? Because that's like, you're getting everything ready. You're getting underway. Captain's on board. You got the stuff going, you know, it's like you're getting ready to embark on this whole thing. So that's kind of what I thought would be a cool title. Like, it's a bit of a deep cut, but it is kind of like, that's that call to adventure.
Absolutely.
And then you're like on this ship with all these guys that have all these different skill sets. You know, and that's like, that's kind of an analog for this whole thing. Cause like I do some leather crafting. I'm kind of getting into blacksmithing. Like, I'm a woodworker hobbyist at my core. And like, that's what I really love doing. But a lot of these other things that I'm bringing into it really accent and bring some value and some texture to some of the things that I create that are really cool. And I don't have to like go to anybody else to make them. It's like, leatherworking is great. And we'll talk about some of that stuff too, but mainly it'll be woodworking. But I just thought, like, you know, you're on a wooden ship, you got to know how to repair it, you got to know how to maintain it. Like, everybody had a little bit of that going on.
Yeah.
And there's all these different facets to it. So I'm kind of the bosun and the bosun's calls that call to adventure. And I've always loved, you know, my family's always had salt water in their veins. We love the sailing and the piracy and all the good stuff. So I thought that, and I've always had kind of a little bit of flavor like that I've thrown into projects that kind of make it interesting. So I just figured, you know, like, hey, here's something different. This is what I'm going to throw at this stuff.
Right on. So how did you first get into woodworking then? Was there someone that influenced that? Was it something you just found an interest in?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely my dad. Like, I grew up in the wood shop, like walking around, messing around with stuff. And my mom had the lathe, so she was the wood turner. So, okay. And I still have, like, pens, and I've got a set of Purple Heart darts that I don't let anybody else throw. And some good stuff. And then, like, dad was the one that was the power tool guy, you know, in the age of, like, home improvement, you know, Tim the Toolman Taylor. So, you know, I think we all have a little Tim the Toolman Taylor.
Absolutely.
So he had all the power tools, right? And I was like, oh, man, like, as a kid, you're just like, oh, yeah, this is so cool. I want to. So, you know, he showed me how to use stuff and be safe with it and all that kind of stuff. And we made projects. I think one of the first projects I made was a sweet bike ramp that folded up. So, and it was the envy of all the kids in the neighborhood. I'm like, yeah, I made that.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, I don't know. I just caught the bug from that, you know, and being able to use that stuff. And as I grew up, you know, being responsible with it and getting, you know, more freedom in the shop when, you know, I could demonstrate that I was safe with stuff and making whatever. So, and then just continuing on with that, I've turned a bunch of stuff. Although I don't have a lathe now, I'd love to have a lathe. So that's one of the things I kind of miss.
You got to add that to the shop.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, the desire for new tools never stops.
You're like, I need another thing. We could put that right there.
Yeah. There's 2 feet over there. I could put something in there. Yeah.
So what was one early project then as you're getting into this? I know you mentioned the bike ramp, but
yeah, the bike ramp definitely was cool. I remember that. I did a lot of little stuff, you know, and it was typical kid stuff. Like, you're throwing things together, like wooden swords and
of course.
And, gosh, what else? I remember helping out with projects. Like, we did this massive, awning in our backyard in one of the houses that I grew up in. Got to help out with that massive project, but, you know, showing me kind of how to do that stuff. And I mean, he did everything from, you know, making little jewelry boxes out of, like, really exotic hardwood species to, like, doing the big stuff and doing, like, home repair, remodel, whatever kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it kind of ran the whole gambit. I remember, yeah, the big awning project. I can't remember really anything else besides that. I do remember the bike ramp. That was pretty cool.
Right on.
It was a sweet jump.
Yeah, I bet. Back in the day when we'd go outside and ride our bikes.
Oh, I remember almost ruining my mountain bike on that thing because it didn't have shocks or anything. And I mean, it was a good, like, I don't know, like, when you're a kid, it seems more.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it was a good, like, I don't know, 2 foot at the top.
Yeah.
So you take a mountain bike off that with no suspension and it starts, like, kind of wobbling weird. Yep. You're like, something ain't right.
Yeah. And what would you say would be some advice you would pass on to beginners who are just embarking or kind of dipping their toe into the water of woodworking?
Yeah, if you think you may have caught the bug and are becoming a woodworker, just jump in. Just get started. Don't go crazy on tools. My rule is I do not buy a tool that I do not have a use for right here and now. Because you can kind of get crazy, like going out and nabbing up a bunch of stuff and then it just sits. And then figure out what it is you want to do, because there's so many different things. I mean, if you're using it for, like, bigger projects that are kind of rougher, you know, if you're doing home improvement stuff like framing, you know, that's got its own kind of set of skills. If you're, like, whittling, that's a totally different animal. If you're wood turning, again, different set of tools, skills. You know, like, you're definitely going to want to invest in some sharpening stuff because you have to sharpen pretty frequently. So it kind of depends on what you're interested in. But just jump in, lean into the community, because woodworkers everywhere, depending what it is, are super happy to share any of their knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And I love right now we're kind of living in this revolution where you used to have to go find like a class or a person to teach you how to do something. And now you have podcasts and video tutorials, and you have, you know, websites devoted on instructional videos that you can go to. And of course you always have like the hands-on classes. And I think for a lot of things, like that's what I would recommend for if you're new getting into it, go take a class, mm-hmm. go find your like community, you know, hey, this is the stuff at the community center that we're putting on, and see if there's one there. Or go to your local woodworking store, you know, Woodcrafters or a Rockler or something. Or even, I think Home Depot even puts on classes.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're going to get a fine woodworking class there.
Right.
You know, but you can go to any of the places where a lot of these tools are sold. They will also have classes. And those are a great thing to sign up for, because then you don't even necessarily have to buy the tools first. You can go and try them. And
right.
you can make something and be like, okay, now I know a little bit about this one versus this one. What am I going to get? What am I going to spend? Because money's hard to come by these days.
Right.
So you definitely want to be, you know, sure about what you're getting. And then a lot of stuff you can get used. I mean, you can lean into that, like forums and things like that. And people are super, super nice in this community. They're happy to help. You know, they've all probably gone through whatever issues you're going to have, so you can get ahead of it a little bit type of thing. So, and I mean, I still, you know, seek out videos and stuff. If somebody, if I'm learning something new or doing a new process or something, or I'm working on a project that somebody's already done, yeah, I'm totally going to go check it out and see if there's something. Like, even if it's something small, like, hey, when you're cutting these tenons, don't do this. I'm like, cool, that's a mistake that could have cost me time and money that I just avoided. So.
Yeah. And then in regard to the tools, is there a specific set, quote, beginner's kit or tools that you would recommend? Hey, this is probably what you're going to need right away as you get started.
Oh, that's like a whole episode right there. And that also, I'm going to give you the most annoying answer ever, which is it depends.
Right.
And so again, like it depends on what you want to do, right?
Okay.
Like if you want to do hand cut dovetails, you know, and you want to get into hand tools, because I'm very much a hybrid woodworker, like going through the reenactment group, of course, you're trying to demonstrate things in the way they were done. So it's a lot of draw knives and handsaws and chisels. And
yeah.
And I like getting into that. I was like, this is kind of cool. I
right.
like this. And in some cases, it's easier. You like whip out a block plane and just, you know, if you're doing an edge chamfer or something and knock that off. And it's like, I just saved a ton of time from setup and like doing this with a trim router or something.
Yep.
And you start to enjoy it. So now I do both. I have both power and hand tools, and I've kind of gotten in. I love the hand tool side of things too. And
yeah.
I like the challenge of like, okay, I'm going to do these dovetails, but only with hand tools kind of thing. So you have to kind of decide, Gesundheit, what kind of woodworker you're going to be. And then that kind of tells you what tools you need to start with.
Okay.
So, you know, that's an annoying answer, but I think we'd have to go deeper into specific kinds of woodworking. Like, what are you going to do?
Right. Dictated by the project that you're embarking on.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're going to, and depends on how much you're going to be doing too. Like, if you're going to be starting a business making molding, okay, well, that's a whole different animal from being a hobby woodworker or something where you're going to just be doing this here or there. If you want to make like picture frames, you know, okay, well, there's a specific set of things that you would probably get in order to, you know, like a router table and, you know, a table saw. Or maybe you're just going to get a miter saw, like a nice miter saw to put all those things together. It just depends.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly you can start used in whatever you decide to start with. There's going to be someone recommending like the beginning steps of that for sure. And I'm happy to get into that as far as, because I've dabbled in just about every one of those. Like I've whittled, I've made picture frames, I've done big stuff, I've done small stuff, I've turned, you know, all that kind of thing. And they all kind of have their own specific set of starter things. But yeah, you definitely want to only get what you need to start with and not go totally overboard.
Right, not get carried away and buy every power saw
Yeah.
Every tool you think is just cool.
Well, and that's where, like, taking a class and being hands-on, especially if they have stuff like loaner things, or if they do want you to bring certain tools to the class, they're going to give you a short list of what you need to get. And it's like, you know, you need to get chisels. Okay, well, yeah, you could go get Harbor Freight and start with those and learn how to sharpen them up and make mistakes and not be afraid to make mistakes because they are cheap.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with cheap chisels. You're just going to be sharpening them like crazy all the time.
Yeah.
They're just going to be softer. Or then you're going to learn that, hey, these edges are super chunky and blocky. And if I'm trying to get into like a dovetail, it's problematic because, you know, I've got this little slanted corner I can't really get into unless I'm like doing some finagling to do that. And then you start to develop preferences and you know, and you'll also get pointers and you can absolutely ask anyone else, either, you know, the leader of the class type of thing. And if you're going to take a class, definitely like be an awesome student, you know, ask questions, put effort into it.
Okay.
Because that instructor is only going to want to sink their time and knowledge into someone that's like a dry sponge, right?
Right.
You know, don't show up being like, I've cut dovetails before and I know what I'm doing kind of thing. Like show up, you know, like a dry sponge ready to soak up that knowledge. But yeah, it really depends. But there's plenty of good info on there about how to start and or start used.
Right. And in regards to you kind of... Your main focus is the woodworking with the podcast, but how does the nautical theme tie in completely? You've kind of touched on some of the reenactment stuff.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, it's cool, and it's the reason for the name and everything, and it kind of got me started on hand tools, which is not something like my dad has ever been interested.
Yeah.
Like he's the guy that's
got the power tool guy.
Oh yeah, he's got the CNC. I don't have a CNC. Like he's got the insane stuff. I think I like the aesthetics of some of that stuff. I have a sea chest build that I'm going to be working on. If you don't know what a sea chest is, it's basically a sailor's, repository for all their worldly belongings on board a ship. And so you would have this, and it's basically, that's your stuff. That's your lot. You got this much space to put it in, and you got this little box. And the sea chest is kind of cool because it's kind of a trapezoid, so it's wider at the base on purpose because a ship would be like rocking back and forth, and with that wider base, it's less likely to topple over or move around.
Okay.
Interesting side note. Do you know there's actually a thing called a thief's knot?
No.
Yeah, so a thief's knot looks like a reef knot. Which sailors would use all the time to reef the sails, right? But if you're like going through somebody's stuff to steal something, you would untie it and you would retie it quick. But because you're all like nervous and trying to steal stuff, you would quickly retie a reef knot and they would know that somebody has been on their stuff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool that there's a knot specifically.
There was a thief in their in their equipment.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I both know from the military, there's right. thieves about.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Tactical acquisition specialist.
Yep. Exactly. Get it right. That's why you put your name on stuff.
Put your name on everything.
Yep.
So I think the aesthetic of it is very cool. And I like incorporating into my projects other things like, you know, the, manila or hemp rope or doing leather accents, or I'm getting into a little bit of blacksmithing so you can make like wrought iron handles of my own type of thing. Like I like that kind of rustic old look, even though it's a, you know, a new build, kind of adding that. Like I love the burnt wood look and stuff like that. So I like these old processes, but then using them on kind of a modern project. So that's one thing that I'd like to do. And then I like it. I like the whole thing. And I mean, I listen to sea shanties in the shop. And I'm like, legit,
get
I have a whole
ambiance going.
Yeah, I have a whole playlist of sea shanties. And I'm like singing and making stuff. And it's like heaving shanties and stuff like that because I'm a huge nerd. I love it. Like, it just gets me in the groove. And so, like, even like my paper towel holder that I made for my French cleat wall in the shop. Is the peg that goes through it is a belaying pin. And a belaying pin would go on a pin rail, which is what you would tie the ropes to. So you can pull the pin out. It releases the rope in a hurry. And so that's actually from the reenactment group from the ship. I stole it, and it was pretty badly checked from sun damage, and I repaired it and everything like that. And then I have a laser, so I lasered in bosun swabbies in there. So that's my paper towels, my swabbies. So, but then it's kind of a new neat artifact, to have.
Absolutely,
you can certainly turn your own belaying pins and have your own swabby holder. So, but it's kind of a cool flavor, and I just love it. I eat it up, and I definitely love all that stuff. Obviously, the newer pirate movies, but I like the Master and Commander and all that stuff. Yeah. So, I just like it. It makes a project more interesting to have some cool flavor like that.
Right.
Like I've seen chests where they have like all these Viking runes and stuff all over it. You have like the Viking hall with the cross dragons on top of it, dragon heads and stuff. And they're like stylized stuff like that. And I like the nautical stuff.
Right. Rather than just a plain box or a plain wood project.
Because then it's like you look at it and it's like it's not just a treasure chest. It's a sea chest. And they're like, or, you get out your iron and you hand stipple in like a giant squid over the top of it, and it's just like, oh, what is that? Like, that's got a story to it.
Exactly.
I love that type of stuff, and that's, I don't know, it's just my take on it, and that's kind of like something I haven't seen, so I kind of wanted to add that flavor not only to like my channel and my podcast, but my projects have always kind of had some of that stuff incorporated into it. And I think it's interesting and unique, and it's definitely a piece of me and my projects as the artiste.
Absolutely. And what would you say was an early project you worked on, or maybe you referenced your channel, your YouTube channel that you have? What was an early project you did where maybe you didn't have YouTube, or YouTube wasn't quite what it is today, and you wish you would have had it to put it out there?
The YouTube channel is still kind of in its infancy for me. I certainly predate YouTube, but there's plenty of projects I've made, and I thought like, oh, this would make a really great YouTube video. Mm-hmm. The tricky part, and the reason why not everyone makes all their projects into YouTube videos, is there's a lot that goes into it, right? And it also slows down the project. So sometimes if it's something on the honey-do list, like I just need to get it done.
Right.
And it's like, having to set up a camera or get a shot for every cut. Not every cut, but different parts of the process and stuff like that to kind of explain it. And then there's like, you could do a little bit for entertainment value, or a lot if you're doing a tutorial.
Yes.
So it just depends. But gosh. The one that I've sought the most help and kind of leveraged the community and I bought plans for was my French style Robot workbench. So it's a hand tool workbench. So it weighs like 2 tons, made out of solid beech and walnut. It's gorgeous. And I got bench crafted hardware for it. So I have a leg vise and a tail vise built into it, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. I also have a floating dead man, which is a block of wood that's used to kind of support longer pieces.
Okay.
That's floats on a rail that's just waxed so it's smooth. It's cool. I love that it's called a floating dead man.
Yes.
And and it's a split top, so it's like, it's great for clamping solutions, and I've got dog holes in it, so just a row of them right now. It's not like some of the other MDF boards that have just dog holes all over them for all those solutions, which are definitely cool if you're going to do one of those for an outfeed table. But I wanted the old school style. So I found a guy online that had a video on it, and he had plans to sell. Also, Benchcrafted had plans that I got as well, and I kind of used the two of them because the YouTuber plans were kind of incomplete in some places. And annoyingly, we're all in metric.
Yeah.
So I had to do a lot of conversions and stuff and figure things out. And then I kind of modified it a little bit to suit my needs at the time, because I had a really small garage that I had to still fit two cars into. So I also put kick casters onto it. So the whole thing, even though it weighs 2 tons, moves, which is cool. And kind of just made it work for my space, and then moved it to our current house, and that's where it lives, and it's kind of the centerpiece, and it's awesome. But yeah, that was a lot of research. It took me a year to build it.
Oh,
it's
wow.
A major project. And oh, by the way, don't take a year to build one of these things, because when when you mill wood and you let it sit for a year, it moves and it changes shape, and it's really annoying, and it leaves gaps and things. So there's plenty of flaws and mistakes in it. So it's kind of it's like an analog of me. Like, it's big and bold and tough, but it's got plenty of flaws and mistakes. So there you go.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's probably the project I leveraged the most as far. But I mean, I still, like, for other stuff, I'm looking for design ideas, and all. Navigate places like Pinterest or whatever, and just to kind of look for some inspiration for design, and then kind of then put my own take on it.
Excellent. Anything specific on the bench right now?
On the bench, not really. Gosh, what am I doing? I'm working on a bar in my basement, and I just bought a whole bunch of bandy clamps on Black Friday. And I'm going to use those and a thin rip guide for the table saw. And I'm going to rip a bunch of hardwood, like thin strips, and use that for edge banding.
Okay.
Because it's a plywood top. And then I may have future plans to do like a live edge top or something fancy on top of the plywood. But for now, you know, I've got some nice oak plywood. But there's certain things I need to hide, so I'm going to do that. So I got a whole bunch of bandy clamps because they were on sale. So that's kind of what's going on, is I'm kind of prepping to do that. As it sits right now, I've got the bones up, and I've got the basic face up, and I need to start doing some of the finishing work.
Excellent. What advice would you give to those just starting out in woodworking?
Oh, just get started. Just jump in. You're going to make mistakes. And that's okay. You're going to make sawdust, and you're going to make firewood. until you just jump into it, it's like anything. There's no amount of research or perusing through how-to videos or reading books or anything that is going to substitute hands-on practice. And there is no amount of any workup leading up to that is going to help you avoid mistakes. Eventually, you're just going to have to learn yourself. You're going to have to get hands-on to learn how grain works. And then if you're going against the grain, it's a pain in the backside. And I think that is, just segue or a side note, the strength of hand tools is you are really up close and personal, and you kind of learn some stuff, because I think a lot of times with power tools, we just, like, we don't care which way we're going. We're just going to rip into it. And it does kind of matter, because your tear out gets worse.
Yeah.
And other things. So kind of understanding how it works is good. And that's really it, is until you jump in, you're not going to learn things like grain direction. And you're going to progress through that. And I think it's good to keep at least photos of early projects, so you have kind of a reference for your progress. Because that's really cool to see. Be like, man, that was a pile of junk. And like, now I'm making stuff, and you never give yourself a lot of credit. Like, I'm very self-critical about stuff like that. I'm like, oh man, this thing's just awful. But then like, looking back, like, no, actually I progressed quite some a ways. So that's always nice too. And I think that certainly, with this whole kind of YouTube revolution with woodworking, and it being a lot more accessible, usually, you know, you used to have to go find somebody to do it. Now you can kind of, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
And also you get some validation from posting it online and being like, hey, I made this. What do you think?
You're right.
Like, yeah. You know, and usually people are really nice about it, but it's kind of cool. You get to throw your stuff out there. You get a little bit of accolades from it, and it's kind of like, kind of helps motivate you, keep you going type of thing. Like, don't get too vain about it, but
right.
But then it's like, you can also look back and see, you know, your progress through it. So that's
exactly,
that's very cool.
That's motivating. So I guess to piggyback on that, what are some obstacles people will run into maybe early on, maybe mid-journey at some point that will get them to be like, this is firewood and I'm going to find a different hobby.
Oh, gosh. Well, for me, it's certainly, I am definitely a perfectionist. And I don't know where I heard this from, but it's like being a good worker, woodworker is not making mistakes. It's knowing how to hide your mistakes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had mistakes made, like in my bench, for instance, where I was routing an edge or something and I just wasn't paying close enough attention, or something moved and the router bit like bit in too far, like past my guidelines. And I'm like, oh, man. And I'm like figuring out how to fix it and making a little tiny piece of wood and trying to match the grain and getting in. I've got a couple of them, like, if I didn't point it out to you, you wouldn't know. And I'm like, I'm almost just as proud as the patches for the mistakes.
Yeah.
You're going to make mistakes. Just jump in, do it. Don't be a perfectionist, because that's like a barrier.
Right.
And then don't be afraid to get plans for some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of our plans is to build a chicken coop. Mm-hmm. And I think I've got a set of plans that I'm going to do, because that's a big time sink.
Right.
Is making the plans and trying to pull it all together. And even if you do make your own plans, like once you start building the project, you're going to run into issues.
Yeah.
And you definitely have to, you know, kind of like engineer on the fly with those kind of things. And hopefully if someone's like selling a set of plans, mm-hmm. they're more complete. They've run through some of the things. They've ironed out some of the issues that they've had when they actually went through and built it. And certainly if there's a video accompanying it, it's kind of nice to see the visuals as to, you know, along with it. You know, so just starting is hard, and then stagnating, like thinking like, oh, I'm gonna have all this time to do all this at once. Sometimes for me, just chipping away at a project, like, hey, I only got 10 minutes I can spend in the shop today, but just spending 10 minutes in the shop,
right,
like chipping away at this or marking out this or whatever, and then like kind of progressing through it gradually is nice, because then you can see you're actually making movement. And then getting towards the end of the project, sometimes that's hard, because you're like, you know, you're kind of being very critical of it. The truth of the matter is no one else is going to see those flaws.
Right.
Like everyone else is going to be, wow, that's perfect. And you're like, no, it's not. But they don't know unless you point out those things to them.
Excellent.
So, yeah, get started. Don't be perfectionist and just keep chugging along.
Keep going. What do you hope people take away from your podcast episodes?
I hope that they get from this what I get from a lot of other people's content, which is the same thing. Like you're looking for a similar project or someone that's run into a similar issue, or you're new into it, you know, and hopefully I'll be entertaining as well. So you can just listen to this. Like I consume podcasts like on the commute, walking the dog, mowing the lawn, working in the shop, whatever type of thing. And it gives you some cool ideas. And, you know, I've listened to other channels and stuff like that and got tools and like all this other kind of stuff. Like, oh yeah, I'm going to check that out, you know, type of thing. And if it's not price prohibitive, like, you know, yeah, that actually like really helps with that kind of thing. And kind of discovering things is really cool. And, you know, I kind of hope to give back to the community in a way that I have received from the community in lots of different really cool ways.
Very nice. And in order to receive what you're giving back, where can people find you?
So you can find us online at bosunscall.com. That's boat, BOATSWA. INSCALL.com. That's our landing website. You can find links to the podcast. You can find links to my YouTube channel. I've only got a few shorts up right now, but hopefully we'll have some stuff in the future. We're definitely going to start with the podcast and then move into that. You can also find us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, where you can find pictures of what is actually on my bench, and you can see some of the stuff in the shop and some of the cool things that we've done in the past. You can also get on the website and reach out to us. We are going to do listener questions in the future, so please send us our questions. And please send us your critiques. We're just starting out, so we're trying to figure out, you know, ways this could be better. So, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down, doesn't matter. We'll take it all into account, especially as we're new, your starting audience. We should get them like a band t-shirt to like prove like I was here first.
Yep.
First episode zero t-shirt or something or whatever type of thing.
Let's do it.
And then we'll be moving on. We'll also have a Patreon account on there. So if you'd like to support the show and jump on there, maybe we'll, maybe if we do beginner band t-shirts, you know, we'll send those out. Episode zero. Podcast.
I like it.
So that's how you can find us. Thank you so much for listening to our episode zero. We'll see you on the internet.
Have a good day, everybody.
Bye.